I don't know yet. My dad left me a few acres up in Montana. I hear it's beautiful there this time of year.
Great idea! I say we cruise on up there and check it out. Hi, honey, I'm home!
Number five?
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg. That work? It worked. Where are my levels?
Where's my snare?
My snare.
I have no snare on my headphones.
You're remote.
Yeah, yeah. Even more remote than usual. I mean, we are on opposite sides of the world, but now I'm opposite side of the world and slightly north.
Yes, it looks very quaint. You look like you could be in a Nancy.
It is quaint. Maya. I actually don't even know the name of the town. I just am realizing as I say this out loud.
How did you get there?
I'm in Massachusetts.
Ah, the spirit of Massachusetts is the something.
You go upstate.
Hang a left.
A couple of friends of ours live here. You go upstate, right? And then you just cross the border into Massachusetts and you no longer have to pay New York State or New York City tax. So you save a lot of money by living up here.
Oh, is it cheaper tax state?
Yeah. And so I think a lot of people do that. So the town is quite cool. It's quaint, but it's like pretty progressive. There's some cool shit out there, you know. Only 2-hour drive from New York.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Brought Seymour with us. He's out there living his best life, sniffing things, peeing on things, the whole spectrum.
Looks very green. Looks very green.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
And I made you get up extra early this morning, didn't I? Poor bastard. I'm sorry.
It's a little bit earlier. It's foggy in Sydney, both figuratively and literally. Very foggy outside, which you can't see. You have to take my word for it.
Nice, nice.
And it's foggy in my brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we don't usually talk about the weather too much on this pod, but this film.
Malfunction. Need input.
Are we padding? We're padding, maybe a little.
Maybe. Look, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening. And what is it, week 4 of AI?
Oh, yeah. I forgot we were even doing AI. Yeah, of course. These are AI movies, and this is our 4th one, very much in the AI canon, I suppose. It's a robot, and he talks, and he's sentient. Am I living? That's how he talks, kind of.
Kind of. Input.
I'm alive.
Malfunction.
Wait, but I should play the thing. Hey, it's our 4th episode of our mini series all about artificial intelligence.
Humans are dead.
It's your birthday. Someone gives you a calfskin wallet.
I think things are getting weird, and they're getting weird fast.
Fuck you, asshole.
So when AI becomes stronger than we are, what do you do exactly?
Malfunction. Need input.
It may be wise to have some sort of contingency plan.
AI. Generative AI. Generative AI. Generative AI. AI is AI. 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 It uses AI to bring AI. 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 AI.
Is this the place they make you real?
A very somber theme for this miniseries, which is quite fitting for this. I've shot all my cards very early, aren't I, Greg? The watch was a slog, though, but we'll get into it. Anyway, what year did this come out? 1986, Greg.
Yeah, mid-80s, 86.
Mid-80s, yeah, right in there.
2 years before Expo.
2BE, yeah.
So not much was happening in the world, just prepping, prepping for the big occasion.
Yeah.
It was a seminal year for a little company. Speaking of computers and graphics and imaging.
Yes.
Little company we know as Pixar.
Oh, really? Oh, when they were just making like hardware and stuff.
That's right. I've got a little, I've got a little early Pixar summary for you if you would like to hear it.
I'd love to.
Well, you're welcome. Here you go. originally started in 1979 as the Graphics Group because they made graphics.
Right.
It was a computer division of Lucasfilms, which you probably knew.
Yeah.
And the focus there was very much on sort of teaching and working with traditional cell animators to work with computer graphics.
Yeah.
So they started making short film sequences. They were fairly groundbreaking. I mean, you look at them now and they're pretty average.
Yeah.
You know, it was 86, mate. Relax. And that was usually done in collaboration with Industrial Light Magic, one of the other divisions of Lucasfilms. They did a couple of movie scenes. So there was a scene from Star Trek where something crashes into like a spaceship, like a meteor crashes into a spaceship. I think it was Star Trek II.
Right.
And so it was getting good traction, but maybe it wasn't core business for Lucas. So he sold it to Steve, I guess you say Jobs?
Jobs, yeah.
Some guy?
Well, apparently he got divorced and sold it because he needed some cash because, you know, the wife was taking half or whatever.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Okay. That makes sense. That checks out. That's obviously fact. So we'll just lock that in.
Yeah, like apparently they were a cog in a machine, right? And they were a lot of those videos
off to the side.
Yeah, they were kind of tech demos rather than art. Well, they were art, but they weren't necessarily positioned that way. And Steve Jobs was like, "Hey, this is fucking art."
Mm.
I don't think he even knew what to do with them yet. He was just like, "I want to let them keep making this stuff.
Do something."
Yeah.
That's right. So that's when they 10 million. So I guess some of that went to Mrs. Lucas.
Yeah. That's so cheap, man.
Pixar. Yeah, I know, 10 mil. That's like
crazy.
What do you get for 10 mil? Can't even buy a hat.
Greg, I'm going to show you Pixar. Some new hat stores, man.
Renamed Pixar after its central creation, the Pixar Image Computer. And that's right. They were mostly doing imaging stuff. So like medical groups, the government, not really sexy stuff.
Yeah.
But they were doing a bit of work with Disney in post-prod. So I think they were doing like touch-ups and little things, little tweaks digitally in the background.
Right.
And then John Lasseter came in and now he had a couple of strings in his bow. And he was making some fairly simple animations, fairly simple but fairly cool. Now, this included a little mini short film called Luxo Jr.
Ah, yeah.
Familiar with the Luxo Jr.?
It's the lamp in the logo.
It's the lamp in the logo. So that was a demo piece. But we all recognize it now as the little lamp that jumps across Pixar before you watch a Pixar film. It's the mascot, you might say.
Yeah, before you laugh and then cry and then laugh again and then cry again and then try to not look like you've been crying when the lights turn back on.
Mm.
Classic Pixar formula. Yeah.
Oh, isn't it? Isn't it? The old laugh, cry, laugh, cry. Laugh.
Cry.
You got to finish on a laugh. Or finish on a cry. I don't know.
You never know which way it's going to go.
It's a laugh cry. There will be tears.
Man, I cried my eyes out in Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Did you?
Yeah, man. Like, not even a little bit, like a lot. It was hardcore.
Wow.
Good movie. You should watch that one.
I will. Sometime.
Sometime.
I do like the Guardians of the Galaxy. I will definitely watch it when it's available on streaming.
Fair.
Where are we? Yes. So, as you said, there were more of these demo pieces, but they were very well received. People started asking them to do commercials, so they were making commercials from...
Listerine.
Listerine did, the FMCJ guys were frothing for it.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, shortly after, Disney came along and said, make me three movies, starting with, can you guess it?
Toy Story.
Pocahontas.
Oh, really?
No, it was Toy Story.
Oh, they came out the same year though,
didn't
they?
They came out the same year though, that's right.
That's a throwback all the way to episode one, and that has stuck with us this entire time.
Yes.
Good on us.
Yes. Well, I still can't believe that Pocahontas and Toy Story came out in the same year, 1995.
End of one era, beginning of another. You know what else I love about the Toy Story?
The baton was passed.
Well, and yeah, man, the Pixar story I love because John Lasseter did work at Disney and he got fired.
Oh.
Because he wanted to do computer animation and they were like, that's not what we do here. He was trying to do the Happy Little Toaster or whatever in CGI. And they were like, mate, that's not what this is. Fast forward 10 years later and he's the head of creative at Disney, like a reverse takeover.
I heard it was because he was kept drawing cartoon porn.
Well, then he eventually did also leave the company for some Me Too stuff.
When that happened. That bit up.
Yeah, he was a I think he was a hugger. I don't know. There were some things. It's a shame because he seemed like seems like a creative genius. Like, why can't we just have a creative genius that's not a jerk? It's a bummer. Ed Catmull is the other Pixar guy. He's more the operations guy. I read his book. But
is that Creativity?
Yeah, Creativity Inc. You have that one? It's really good.
Yeah.
He seems like a legend, that guy. Ed Catmull, we salute.
I'm looking backwards because it's meant to be on this shelf behind me somewhere. Where? I don't know.
Man, you know what that reminds me of too? You know how we love a little like little reverse takeover-y?
Oh, yeah.
You know how like when we've done Aladdin and some other movies and we've talked about and Little Shop of Horrors and we've talked about Howard Ashman and Alan Menken and how they were just a couple of guys that did a random off-Broadway show about a plant that eats people. And then they became like the kings of Disney as well. It's so cool. I love that. Like just a couple of guys, man.
Yeah.
And Pixar guys were the same. Just a couple of guys.
Following their hearts.
Yeah, following their hearts.
It's almost like a Pixar film. Almost like a Pixar film in itself, Tristan.
Fuck, that's a good point. One thing I do think about way too much, I spend too much energy thinking about this, is like just the brand strategy of Pixar relative to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I'll throw something out there, right? Frozen, Disney. Yeah, makes sense. It's a princess, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Wreck-It Ralph, also Disney.
Mm.
Wreck-It Ralph seems like it should be Pixar.
Mm.
If you're giving Pixar non-human objects human characteristics, then I feel like that's a Pixar thing.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like they kind of dropped the ball there on like having like clear lanes for the two.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Now I'm going to think about that now.
Yeah. Anyway, hit me up, Disney, if you need a brand strategy. I mean, Disney and marketing, they have no idea what they're doing. Who were we giving advice to the other week?
I think it was Steve Spielberg and Kubrick.
Yeah. Yeah, we got all kinds of advice.
Still waiting for the thank you email.
Hey, we're a couple of middle-aged white guys with a podcast. We've got advice for anyone.
That's right.
But yeah, big year for Pixar, Greg. Big year for Pixar. Big year for movies too.
Big year for movies, 86.
Big year for our podcast too because we've done a lot of them. Oh, we're doing one next week. All right, so big movies. Biggest movie in the world was Top Gun, which we've covered. Second biggest movie in the world was Crocodile Dundee, which we've covered. Platoon, number 3. Number 4, Karate Kid Part 2. Number 5, Star Trek Part 4. Number 6, Back to School. Number 7, Aliens, which we're doing next week. Next week, right? Next week. With the fellas from Raiders of the Lost Podcast.
Last Action Podcast.
Raiders of the Lost Podcast. Very excited to have those fellas on. Big fans, and they're lovely blokes that love to chat movies, so it should be good.
And they're brothers.
Twinsies, like us, according
Twinsies
to
like us.
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't say twins, but they thought we were brothers.
Mm. We could be twins. Bags being Danny DeVito.
I was trying to think of an Arnold line from Twins and I couldn't think of anything. I was going to say Julius.
I was going to say Cornelius and that would have been wrong. I like your shirt. It's all cotton.
I'm your brother.
What's the movies what's his together. Name? Get lost together.
That's right. Get lost together. Yeah, we could have done a whole bit there if we knew the movie better. Yeah. Make a podcast together.
Yeah.
Have you watched the new Arnold TV show on Netflix?
No.
I'm scared to watch. It looks like it might be terrible.
Oh, really?
But it might be awesome. I don't know. I can't tell. I've just lost faith in Netflix quite a bit.
I have a big backlog of things to watch.
Yeah. There's never enough time. Anyway, speaking of time, I need to keep going. All right. What do we got here?
Come on.
The Golden Child, number 8. Yeah, right. Ruthless People, number 9. Number 10, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But coming in at number 21, a little film about a little robot named Johnny Five, a little film called Short Circuit. Short Circuit came out in May of 1986, budget of $15 million, gross box office of $40.7 million. That's some solid Romy right there. Rock solid. Rotten Tomato scores, critic score 61%, audience score 67%. Again, like that's way higher than I thought it would be, to be honest.
Quadruple.
I mean, it's all subjective, so fair enough. This is someone's favorite movie, and I respect that.
Ish.
And you can probably tell it's maybe not mine. But anyway, critic consensus as follows. Amiable and good-natured, but also shallow and predictable. Short Circuit is hardly as deep or emotionally resonant as E.T., though Johnny Five makes for a charming robot protagonist. Yeah, that's not far off. Anyway, was this a big movie for you back in the day, Greg?
Yes.
Yeah? Really?
Especially number two.
Yeah, that seems to be the bigger one maybe, yeah. Because I thought I'd seen this and I don't think I have. I know I'd seen one of them on just on a daytime TV or something at some point as a kid, but I don't think it was this.
I'm just having a, when did Short Circuit 2?
I think it was 88.
88, oh yeah, there you go.
So I guess you didn't see it at the cinema, yeah.
It's got, oh, Fred Ritter? That's not John Ritter. Look, this one I don't remember too well.
Yeah.
I remember it had, well, it's got a similar cast. The Goots, Steve.
Yeah.
And the PR guy from Succession, apparently.
Somewhere.
So, yeah, look, I don't have too many memories of it, specifically number one. Number two was big. With the gangs and such, and he gets spray painted. I don't really remember too much about him other than that I was quite young. I was like six or seven when I watched these. So
because he goes to New York in the second one, right?
He goes to New York, yes. Which is, you know, the style of what you do in a sequel in the '80s.
I was going to say because Crocodile Dundee came out this year too, where he goes to New York, I think we said when we did that I thought. That he didn't go to New York until number two because it feels like a sequel thing. Like in New York is like the perfect.
Yeah.
Like Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Mm.
Friday the 13th, something, Jason Takes Manhattan. Like going to New York is like, stupid and great.
Except in the instance of Escape from New York when it was the first one.
That's true. Then LA and that's why they fucked it up.
Yeah, they fucked it. You fucked it up, John.
Actually, I haven't seen Escape from LA properly, I don't think. Should do that soon. LA movies.
La La Land. City of Angels.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you? Same-ish?
Yeah. Yeah, no. No. I mean.
Haven't seen it.
I thought I'd seen it. I guess I'd seen bits of this or the sequel, not totally sure. I was familiar with the character and the Fisher Stevens stuff, but I always thought it looked fun. I guess we'll get into that in a second. But, yeah, not a big one for me. I think it's an important one to explore on the spectrum of artificial intelligence. So, you know, it's due diligence that we're covering it. But it is a bit of a departure from a lot of the films we've been covering recently. So, yeah, interesting. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Should I get into the origin story?
Please.
Origin story.
This one's going to be short and sweet. Because I couldn't find too much about the origin story because most of the articles are just about Fisher Stevens wearing brown face. But apparently, Amanda, actually it sounds kind of similar to the Pixar story. This film was conceived after producers distributed an educational video about robot to colleges. So like it was like a industry functional output.
Just like Pixar.
They were like, wait, what if we actually made a consumer-facing film about a robot? And they thought, you know, because there's robots in other films at this point, you know, the gay robots of Star Wars. And they thought, E.T. But they thought, what if we took a robot like that, put it in the real world and, you know, the tension was that people didn't believe that that was possible, that he would be sentient. He's not, that he wouldn't just be a tool or, you know, whatever. This thing writes itself, or it appeared to. It was directed by John Badham, who did Saturday Night Fever and Drop Zone.
Ah.
So, you know, a friend of the show for the most part. Okay, but get this, two writers. S.S. Wilson and Brent Maddock, whatever. They wrote this film which came out in 1986.
In 4 minutes.
Well, then they wrote another film that came out in 1987 called Batteries Not Included, which as far as I remember is just another robot movie.
Yeah.
I can't really remember what that is. But I've got to imagine it's similar.
I thought that was an alien one.
Oh,
I feel like there was a lot of product placement in it. Or was that Mac and Me?
Yeah, I think that's Mac and Me. But it's in that ballpark. Anyway, we'll get into that. And then the very next year they wrote Short Circuit 2. So, you know, they got a lane.
A niche.
They also wrote Tremors, which everyone loves, which I have not seen. We should do that. And Wild Wild West.
Oh, everyone's got their greasy little mitts on Wild Wild West.
I know, right? It's an all-star stew of people.
Stew.
That we've kind of liked. I mean, I don't know if I like these people, but, you know.
Batteries Not Included is about a small extraterrestrial living spaceships that save an apartment block under threat from a property development. Ah.
Wow.
They save the town hall. That's the community center. That's pretty cool.
You're going to save the community center. That's cool.
The whole apartment block.
I like, so I take it back. They didn't just do the same movie again. They said, okay, what if in the next one, instead of a robot, it's not a robot?
Yeah.
So no batteries.
It's an alien.
Because aliens don't need batteries.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
Aliens were the style at the time too.
Fuck, actually, Greg, Crocodile Dundee came out in 86. He goes to New York. He goes to New York, right? And they go, okay, so Short Circuit 2, he goes to New York. Aliens came out in 1986 too. They're like, yeah, okay, our next film should be about aliens. I see what they did there. You know, there's a formula here.
It's watching the market.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll unpack the Fisher Stevens stuff a little later in more detail, but I do want to mention it here just in the context of pre-casties. So Fisher Stevens was initially cast in that role, but originally that role was a white guy.
Mm.
So he wasn't out there auditioning to be an Indian person. He auditioned to be a white guy. He got cast as a white guy. And then the writers decided to change it to an Indian guy because Steve Guttenberg's character is white. And they thought, well, these characters are too similar. So we should change his skin color. That'll make him. Rather than change the character, let's just change his ethnicity. Anyway.
Change his accent.
Yeah. So initially, Fisher Stevens kind of got pushed to the side and they brought in Serge himself, Bronson Pinchot, to play the Indian version of this character.
Serge sounds like a detergent.
But then he actually bailed to go make Perfect Strangers.
Oh, wow. So they act. I read that the director, well, read a quote from the director saying, I basically stole the idea from Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So Serge, the character, was just like, that's what we need, like a Serge. So they actually got Serge in. That's cool. We'll go straight to the source.
That's exactly what happened because, again, like we just went through the top 10 and the next films were very reminiscent of what was in the top 10 this year. But that was exactly it. I saw Fisher Stevens talk about it too. He said, yeah, Bronson Pinchot was in there at some point and he had to leave. And so then Fisher Stevens was back in the picture and they were just like, hey, can you do Indian? And he's like, I guess so. And I guess for context, he's like a kid at this point. He's like 22 years old or whatever. And you know how acting is. You're like, you got a gig, fucking take it.
Yeah.
Anyway, more on that later. One little interesting Easter egg about Fisher Stevens though, which is delightful. Actually, I just realized it's almost like our anagrams joke, but his real name is Stephen Fisher,
right.
Not Fisher Stevens. Yeah, but there was already an actor named Stephen Fisher apparently, so he changed it to Fisher Stevens.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What would you have done?
I don't know, because it's not even a name with two first names. You know, like if you had one of those names, it's easy. Paul Allen, Alan Paul, whatever. Carney Gregg. Carney Gregg sounds like a character that works at a carnival and smells like cabbage.
Well, maybe he is. Maybe that's maybe there's a Carney Gregg out there that's actually me.
Anyway, he gets back in the movie. They put piles of makeup on him and give him brown contact lenses and bish, bash, bosh, you got yourself a film, Rap Party at the Viper Room.
They said they also dyed the hairs on his arm.
Yeah, they did say that.
I got long hairs on my leg and the kids watch them go up and down in the pool.
Is that your Joe Biden?
Yeah.
It was like Joe Biden as Abe Simpson. That was good.
Yeah, well, there's some similarities there.
I want to hear Biden talk about having an onion tied to his belt. It was the style at the time. Let's play the trailer.
It's the ultimate soldier.
It doesn't get happy, it doesn't get sad, it doesn't laugh at your jokes.
It is quite simply the most sophisticated robot on Earth.
Tonic. At Nova Robotics, the future is in good hands.
You're doing real good. Just keep working on those last two bars.
Thanks to Dr. Newton Crosby.
Originally, I designed it as a marital aid.
But artificial intelligence has gotten too smart.
No.
It's malfunctioning. It might not do anything.
But it could decide to blow away anything that moves, couldn't it?
Because $11 million worth of robot just hit the road.
Wow!
Number 5 is alive.
Welcome to my planet.
You just have to find number 5, get some answers.
Why don't you come on in my house?
And it's got a lot of living to do.
Whatever it takes to put that stupid contraption out of commission, that's what you do.
Me input.
Haven't you had enough of this stuff?
More input.
And they can seem quite lifelike, but they are still machines.
Oh. Number 5 is alive.
Nice software.
How it happens, who knows, but it has happened.
A new comedy adventure from John Badham, the director of War Games.
They're going to be after you. We got to get out of here now.
Hey, he's alive!
No!
Ally Sheedy, Steve Guttenberg, and Number 5.
Beautiful.
Short Circuit.
I am alive.
That movie doesn't look too bad.
Hmm. That was the good bits.
Yeah. It's a short trailer too.
Yeah.
What happened to this movie, Craig?
Astoria, Oregon, 1986. A town that has seen its fair share of action. Just 12 months earlier, a group of misfit kids apprehended a violent, murderous family of robbers and located the treasure of one-eyed Willie. A few years later, a comically huge Austrian cop would go undercover at the local elementary school in an attempt to flush out yet another violent murderer who may be looking for his son. But it's 1986. Wedged between those events, mankind is playing God.
Wait, are they in the same town?
Yeah, it's all Astoria, Oregon.
Ah.
There's so many movies there. There's others as well. There's like a Turtles movie.
Well, I was wondering, are there a lot of Astorias? Because there's Astoria in Queens as well. Is Astoria like Springfield? Is there just like...
No, these are all set in Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did my research.
I
don't just wander into a synopsis, Tristan. I don't just wander into a synopsis carelessly, hoping my facts might be facts. They're playing God, Tristan. They're playing God. They've commissioned Nova Robotics Industries to develop combat-ready robot soldiers, deadly lasers and big cute eyelids. And on one fateful day, number
five... Let's make sure we give them eyebrows so they can express.
Yeah, that gives it a human touch. Number 5 is struck by lightning and begins to think it's alive. Number 5's escapes into the real world and goes on a magically boring adventure of self-discovery.
Yeah, that's astute. Because the premise is fine, the trailer is fine, the whole idea, the whole concept is fine.
It's fine.
It just needs to be better.
There are humans there too.
Oh yeah,
and they also make some boring discoveries. It's a boring movie, and the robot's horny.
He is nice software. It's weird.
It's weird. That's kind of it.
I thought I would like this movie genuinely, and I'm sorry out there if you love this movie, because that's totally fair. You're allowed to love stuff.
It's just best left in the past. Oh, wait.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's some pretty objective reasons why it's probably best left in the past, but before we get to that, just like the film itself, like, conceptually I was like, this will be a really fun one to do. But watching it, man, and I had to buy it. I had to buy it. There wasn't even a rent option. They know what they're doing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I got to rent it. What do they charge you for it?
$10.
USD?
$10 American. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
What a bummer.
Damn. So how did you find it?
I loved it. Yeah. I was watching it and I kept checking how much time was left. at first I was like, no, this is cool. And you know, there was more to it than I realized. I didn't realize there were essentially weapons. I didn't realize there were multiple of them. Number five, of course, that makes sense now. So I realized, oh, this is interesting because it's a bit like RoboCop in that sense where, you know, there's like the bad ones, the robots, I don't know. You know, I kind of thought, oh, this movie is a bit like RoboCop mixed with Iron Giant a little bit. You know, built to be a weapon but doesn't want to be a weapon, that sort of thing.
Like Drago.
Yeah, yeah. A cross between RoboCop, the Iron Giant, and Rocky IV. Is that four?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right.
That was a bad example, but
no, I like
let's keep moving.
I mean, maybe I mean, the puppetry, I think technically there's cool stuff in here. Like the puppetry is really cool. Like it's pretty slick. And you know, it is like a freestanding robot that moves around and stuff. Like that's all technically pretty impressive. And it was pretty cool to, you know, we've done a few AI movies at this point. And I feel like this is the first one that is the most explicitly a robot, you know, that talks weird and yay. You know, we haven't had that campy side of robots yet. So it's been fun. An actual robot. It's, like it's the Matrix astute. Was more of
that's
like.
Astute. That's very astute on your part.
Thank you. The Matrix is more, you know, the internet and like AI as a network kind of thing. I guess.
Conceptually.
Spielberg's AI technically were robots, but they looked like humans. And then Blade Runner, I guess they were just essentially humans. But yeah, so it's nice to get some tactile, you know, metal, you know, the caterpillar wheels shit. Is that what they call them? Yeah, that kind of shit was fun. But I'll pause there, Greg, because I want to hear what you thought about this film. Five stars?
Well, I'm going to start. I found someone that liked this film.
Oh, yeah?
So I thought I'd start by quoting them.
Nice.
This was a quote from just a couple of years ago. A person named Steve Guttenberg was very proud of this film when he and the director were both interviewed recently. My character, Newton Crosby, the scientist who designed Number 5, was written very well. All of the moments were there. All I had to do was step in and decorate the house. John was quite immersed in the artificial intelligence even then. That's the director.
Right.
We talked about what it is to be alive and the connection with having a soul. Walking the tightrope between humor and heart was something we were very careful of. We didn't want to fall into sentimentality. You wanted to strike a chord with the audience where they're getting what they paid to see, which was the wonder of an inanimate object coming to life. For me, Short Circuit was Pinocchio.
That's interesting. I mean, 20 years later, that's what Spielberg and Kubrick are talking about. Well, I guess Kubrick was probably talking about it back then too. But it is a little Pinocchio, isn't it?
Different takes on it.
It was interesting that this film was more explicitly focused on that. Like, I thought this film would just be, oh, he happens to be a robot and we're going to have to like dig for the AI angle on this. But the crux of the film, like at the end of him saying, I'm alive, is kind of the whole point. That, oh, yeah, we did it. Like, he's conscious and this is a living thing.
Is he laughing?
Yeah! Yeah! And the joke wasn't even that funny, and I think I screwed up the punchline.
Whatever God wants, he keeps.
Oh, you look kind of shook up.
Yeah, it's really true. Spontaneous emotional response.
I am alive, yes?
Yes.
So, yeah, really, I kind of, well, did I enjoy that? I don't know. But I appreciated that the film actually did go there with it and made it, you know, it's like the PG or the kids version of the Blade Runner question, I guess, you know?
Precisely. That's where I landed on it. This is the kids version.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be fair, like, this is a kids movie, man. Like, I don't know. As I was watching it, and you told me, I don't know. I was like, I don't know. Maybe like Bruce and Lola might like this. I don't know. Yeah. And so that has value.
I'm going to try Short Circuit 2 with them.
I would love, if the Iron Giant wins Fans' Choice, I'd be interested to see if they like it.
Yeah, okay.
Bruce in particular.
What's the other one? Big Hero 6. You seen that?
Yeah, it's good. I like that film.
That's AI, I guess.
Is it? I can't remember.
That's a robot.
Oh, yeah. Betamax or whatever his name
is. Betamax. That's good. That's heartfelt. You'll cry in that. His brother dies. Spoiler.
Man, that was hardcore. Man, that's one of those movies that I really liked and then forgot existed at all.
Yeah, that comes onto our TV a bit. Carl's a fan. I like it.
It's cool.
Gets a run.
Yeah. There are some weird things in this movie too that almost make me go, I don't know. It's like almost like little clues or little potentials that just little hints of what this movie perhaps could have been in terms of it being, because what I was saying before about the premise and everything, even the aesthetic and the cast, well, mostly I'm like, yeah, I'm like this, I would, if I was being pitched this idea, I'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah. But sometimes with movies like this, it just needs to be funnier or I don't know, just like something, give me something more, like just within that construct, give me more of the good stuff. But there were some weird lines in this and weird moments in this that I'm like, wait, is that hilarious? Like Gutenberg asks Fisher Stevens at one point, where are you from anyway?
Oh, nice.
Which is kind of great because, I mean, I don't know if it was written as the joke because he's like in brown face, but.
He's like, wait, you're not real.
Yeah, like is that? It's almost like a, it's almost like a Tropic Thunder joke or something.
Yeah,
Ali Sheedy's character had a hell of a lot of cats. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah,
like a lot of cats. Did they talk about the cats or were they just there?
Yes, she collected animals.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of, she was shocked to learn that he was a robot.
Yes.
Which was another thing I thought was stupid. Then I was like, wait, no, is that hilarious? Like he's fucking made of metal, man. And he has wheels. And she was so upset when she found out he was a robot.
Well, because aliens were the style at the time and she thought she had one.
Of course.
She would have seen E.T., thought it was her turn, flying around on a push bike with a little basket.
That's what she was preparing, fucking robots. But, you know, she was cool with it 5 minutes later, which is good. And then Fisher Stevens himself had some weird lines, man. Like towards the end when she agreed, or she, I don't know, Gutenberg was talking about having a crush on her or whatever. He says, I think she's a virgin, or at least she used to be.
Yeah, he goes, what do you think of her? And he goes, I'm thinking she's a virgin, or at least she used to be.
What does that mean? Like, I don't get what the joke is in that exactly.
Yeah.
Like, from a character point of view, is that like a thing? Is that like a...
He's like a sexually repressed little nerd at this point.
Yeah, right? Is that... It's odd.
There's only one virgin on the screen at that point. It's Ben.
But again, if there was more like cohesion and consistency between all these weird moments, it might add up to a pretty hilarious movie, but
I had that written down as well. What was that?
So weird. I felt uncomfortable writing it in my notes. Like, what if someone sees this out of context?
And we've just said it's a kids movie.
Yeah, true.
It's the 80s, man. Wow.
Yeah. I was thinking if it was remade now, it'd probably be a stoner movie. And you know, the robot smokes weed at one point or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Seth Rogen voices the robot. Yeah, that would be the movie.
Well, it was a very horny robot.
Yeah, nice software.
Yeah.
That's how he knew he was alive.
Yeah.
That should be the test. How do robots react to boobs?
Well, do you reckon they let him watch? Because he can't, you know, he's horny, but he's a robot.
Yeah. What's he going to do?
Yeah, maybe they let him watch. That, you know.
Maybe.
Well, then three of them obviously go off into the sunset together. Look, it's just a thought, okay?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm no judgment here. I'm with you. Yeah, Fisher Stevens didn't get invited to the party. That's a shame.
Maybe he did.
But he's the main character in the second one, right?
I think so, yeah. Double down.
Should we open that can of worms?
Yeah.
It's super interesting, right?
It's Beverly Hills Cop's fault.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, essentially.
Eddie Murphy's fault specifically.
I think the tone of this one is like, the actor is the actor, whatever. He did the job. I do think, you know, if I was his age in 1986 or whatever, as if I'm going to turn down money. And this is not me saying it's okay. This is just me saying I don't blame the actor. But so much of this type of shit was going on at the time, like India specifically, like even in Australia on the Footy Show and like even the one of the breakfast shows, right, on Today FM or whatever, like there was the Guru and it was like pretty common to have this type of Indian character as a pretty like go-to dumb joke thing, which, you know, we were all complicit in at the time, but it's pretty fucking weird. Like I remember when I first heard about it, it was, I think I was reading Aziz Ansari's book, which is crazy to say because I've just talked about two books I've read on one podcast and I'm pretty sure they're the only two books I've read in the past 10 that's years.
Learned, Tristan.
I'm not a bookman. I'd love to be a bookman. But he talked about it and he said, like, as a kid, he loved Short Circuit 2 and he loved the fact that it had an Indian guy as the lead. He was like, wow, I never see this. And it wasn't until years later he was like, what happened to that Indian actor that was in Short Circuit 2? And then found out it was Fisher Stevens. And I've actually got a clip of him here talking about it on Conan. I think his take on it is great. Like, rather than us, you know, white mansplain it or whatever, I think his take on it is like pretty balanced and solid. Again, there's like no ill will towards Fisher Stevens. It's more just the overall, you know, situation is not great.
Yeah.
But here's the clip. It's good stuff.
Master of None, there's an episode where you focus on the movie Short Circuit 2. And this is an important, it's an important topic for you, Short Circuit 2.
Well, the episode's called Indians on TV. It's about Indian people in entertainment. And Short Circuit 2 kind of plays a strange role in that for me because I watched that movie when I was
a kid.
The
movie was like from the 86?
87.
87,
yeah. And it stars an Indian guy. And he's the main character. And I'd never seen a movie where an Indian guy was like the main guy. And then as I got older, I was like, what happened to that Indian actor that was in Short Circuit 2? And then I Googled around, and it's not an Indian guy. It's Fisher Stevens, a Caucasian actor, and they put brown face makeup on him.
Right.
And it was a crazy thing to discover, and so we talk about that a little in the episode.
Now, you spoke with Fisher Stevens. It was you did a New York Times article, and you spoke with Fisher Stevens. You called him up, is that right?
I did. I called him. Because, you know, you see that stuff and it's like, oh, my God, like, that's horrible. It's racist. And I was writing this article. New York Times asked me to write this article. I was like, you know what? I want to call him and talk to him and hear his side of the story. Because I feel like now in, like, internet culture, it's just all about, you know, we're all just sharks looking for blood. And anytime someone says racist stuff or drops an N-bomb, I feel like there's all these websites that are like, yes, we can write about that for a week. This is awesome. Right. And it's like, we're not sharks. We shouldn't be looking for blood. We're human beings. We should talk to people and look for dialogue and understanding. And I talked to him and it was really interesting because, you know, he was like a young actor. He was like 21 years old. They offered him this huge part in a movie. Originally, he's supposed to be a white guy. And then some person at some point was like, you know what? We changed to an Indian guy. Can you do Indian?
Right.
Which is an insane question.
Right.
And he was like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And he worked with a dialect coach and he spent time in India. And he tried to do it in a thoughtful way. So it was interesting to talk to him and hear that side of the story.
It's nice that you reached out to him and sort of.
Yeah, I'm glad I heard his side.
Humanized the side of the story.
Yeah.
And that's clips from 7 years ago. So he didn't even use the phrase cancel culture because it probably didn't exist yet. But I appreciate the sentiment that he's not out there looking for blood. He's out there looking for understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I doubt he felt he got that. It was interesting hearing Fisher Stevens at the time interviewed by the great Bobby Wygant.
Bobby, yeah.
And, yeah, I think it was interesting because whilst it was more common back then, it was still the first question she asked him. You play an Indian guy.
Yeah.
Why didn't they get an Indian guy? So it wasn't like, it was like, you played an Indian. What was that like? It was like, why?
I'm looking at you, Fisher, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a ringer. You know, you don't look anything like your character.
Mm.
Your eyes are blue. Character's eyes are brown.
Yeah. Hair's dyed.
Yeah.
Arm hair's dyed. Other hairs died, but no. It was like a complete change, and I had to walk around in all this makeup and gook all the time, yeah.
So why didn't they, if they were looking for that, get that in the beginning,
Good question. What happened was I was originally hired. The original character in Short Circuit's name was Ben Chigger, and he was supposed to be a UCLA robotics genius.
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird, right? And I saw a clip from Short Circuit 1, not with the lovely Bobby Wygant, unfortunately. Wygant, We'll never know. she's a delight. But it's some guy. And actually, I don't want to play the clip, but I need to show you what he looks like. Just 1 year earlier, the Bobby Weigert interview, he kind of just looks like Fisher Stevens now, younger, as you would expect. But his interview for Short Circuit 1, he like somehow is kind of hot. Look at this guy. Well, that's not him.
This must have been where he dated Michelle Pfeiffer.
That makes sense because check this out. Is this guy? Is that Johnny Depp? Is that Jonathan Depp?
Good hair.
Yeah, amazing hair. Yeah, anyway. That's quite a physical transformation on every level.
Yeah, what happened?
He's a very interesting looking dude. Every time he shows up on Succession, I'm like, why is his neck so thin? How does he balance his head? It's insane. Yeah. Uh-huh. You notice that? It's like a pencil.
Yeah, I certainly have.
And I'm sorry if he has any issues with that. I don't mean to. But man, it is. I just can't help myself. I just think about it all the time, like the physics of it. It's super interesting. It's not much more to say other than I guess everyone agrees that they wouldn't do it now and probably shouldn't. But, you know, it's the first time we've gotten to talk about this. I thought there would be more of this. I guess, oh, no, Tong Po, I guess, was maybe the first.
Oh, yeah. Tong Po is a good face. One. It's still, there's plenty of recent examples.
Yeah. What's her name?
Yeah, Scarlett Johansson, Emma Stone.
Emma Stone, that's what I was thinking of. She played half
Emma
Asian.
Stone played a half. I was like, half Chinese. I'm like, oh, half. And then she goes, half Chinese, half Hawaiian.
Yeah. Part of my brain, when it's the half thing, part of my brain goes, well, if an Asian person plays a half Asian person, they're only half of what that ethnicity is. So a white person should be able to do, which I guess theoretically is maybe true, but I think it's with this
half,
stuff, it's
half
like,
Hawaiian, though.
It's yeah, I know half Hawaiian, right? For me, with this stuff of actors playing, even with the gay thing too, like can straight actors play gay people? Sure. But also there's a lot of gay actors out there who probably would love an opportunity to, you know, tell a story that reflects their lives. So I guess until we live in a world where there's lots of that, it just feels weird to not give it to someone that has actually, you know, has some experience to draw on. Actually, what's his name? Denzel Washington has a really good thing. He said, maybe I'll put a clip in. I can't remember what it's from, but he said in some interview, he said,
so why did he need a black director? Could a white director not have?
It's not color,
work?
It's culture.
Explain the difference, because I think we're
Steven
in a space
Spielberg
right now.
Did Schindler's List. Mm-hmm. Martin Scorsese did Goodfellas, right? Steven Spielberg could direct Goodfellas. Martin Scorsese probably could have done a good job with Schindler's List, but they're cultural differences. You know, I know, you know, we all know what. It is when a hot comb hits your hair on a Sunday morning, what it smells like. Huh? That's a cultural difference, not just a color difference. Right. So it's a culture.
And I think the same could be said for this. Even though Fisher Stevens did spend 1 month in India, don't know if that's going to cut it.
Yeah.
But good on him for trying.
Yeah.
I think he even says in one of the clips, like, you know, I was method at the time, so I went and spent some time in India.
Yeah.
For Short Circuit.
had a real Shantaram moment.
Well, should we talk about another cast member that's all positive? Tim Blaney, the voice of Johnny Five. He is also a puppeteer. He didn't do the puppeteering in this one, but he's done puppeteering in The Abyss, Team America, Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh.
But he also did the voice of Frank the Pug in Men in Black.
Oh.
And
different take.
The voice of one of the weird little alien things in Flight of the Navigator. So there you have it. I like him, friend of the show.
Mm. Apparently there was original groundswell was for Robin Williams, but then they're like, no, we got this guy.
That's so interesting because I was thinking that when he started doing the different voices, right, because he was doing, you know, impressions of things and stuff, I thought, oh, yeah, I could see a Robin Williams in the mix there. But it wasn't quite the style at the time, right? Voice actors were still voice actors then.
Yes.
Robin Williams hadn't done Aladdin.
Aladdin.
All right, should we get into tropes? This is an interesting one, Greg, because this is the first one we've done. You know, our first trope is, you know, the depiction of the future. Is it brutalism, cyberpunk, etc.? This isn't the future. This is 86, 87? I can't remember what we said. 86.
86.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not a dystopia. It's not brutalism. It's 2 years before the peak of human civilization. So, not bad. Good time. Human extinction? No. No, not yet. Robots bad or humans bad or both? Kind of both and neither. You know, once they reached a point of shared understanding, they were all good, baby.
Yeah.
I think, except for some of the jerk military people. But then the one
jerk boyfriend.
Yeah.
Ex-boyfriend.
But then the guy with the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. That was, what the fuck was that? are humans the virus? Yeah, that didn't really come up with this one.
It didn't.
AI Bechdel?
No.
I think there's some stuff between the robots at some point, but I guess they're talking about humans, if anything.
Well, except for when they're doing the Three Stooges routine. That doesn't cut it, though. That doesn't cut it at all.
Also, they don't have names. They're numbers.
Oh.
So that's a bust. But did this film build a case for AI love? I think so.
Oh, yeah.
More than most that we've covered so far.
He's part of the family.
Yeah. I'm living. Wait, the voice is evolving now, as it tends to do.
Yes.
So, yeah, all in all, this is a bit of a departure from a lot of the other ones we've done as far as tropes and, well, let's be honest, as far as everything else too. But, you know, variety is the spice of life.
I imagine if Steve Guttenberg was Morpheus.
Fuck.
Could you picture Steve Guttenberg as Morpheus?
Maybe with the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
I could picture him as one of the other people in that crew. I could picture him as Joey Pants' character, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Well, did we ever see bad Steve Guttenberg?
No, but I would buy into it.
Feels like a missed opportunity, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like Guttenberg. I'm a Guttenbergman. He's my favorite of the three dads.
Is he?
Or the men. Oh, well, hang on. Let's take a step back. I want to be the blueprint. I want to be... Magnum, but I'd prefer to hang out with him, I think.
Yeah, I think
so. You know, he's a cartoonist and stuff. And
yeah, and I'm with you. Or Ted Danson, because he's just a bit loose.
Yeah, true. Let's get into the verdict, Greg, unless you have any other burning things to talk about.
I had one thing I forgot, and it's a 10-second thing. I forgot my favorite thing from these movies was how he could read books like that, and I used to fantasize about being able to read books at the speed of... I used to actually hold books up and try and do it, and the information never went in.
That's fucking cool.
Anyway, that's
right. And I'm the opposite. I'm the exact opposite. That's why I don't read books, because I'm so slow at reading, like so insanely slow at reading, that it takes me like a year to read one book.
And then you start getting stressed because you know it's taking you too long?
Yeah, like I'm blown away by people that have book clubs and like read a book in a week. That's insane to me.
Yeah,
I read it at the same speed that I read out loud. Like I can't do the thing where they just, I need to read the words out in my brain.
Be comfortable with that and just take longer.
I am. And then I just wait for the movie. And, you know, I read the films, Greg. We do a podcast. We unpack these things. We go deep in, well, sometimes. And then other times we do Short Circuit. All right, let's get into verdict.
Yes.
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
I am the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Ah! Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further,
Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Well, Greg, for the first time, I think, you know, our first one is always, is there any core component of this film that fundamentally breaks in current day? And there is. Fisher Stevens in brownface fundamentally does not hold up. Like that's,
no.
I was about to say, it's black and white. Or brown and white perhaps. Yeah. Like I think the first time we can officially have like a big does not hold up, or at least one element of it officially does not hold up. It's the first time we've ever had that. FX test, I'd say it's pretty fucking solid, man. I'm down with FX.
Why not? And a dancing robot.
Yeah, right? That's what
props were.
That's how you get the movie sold. Yeah. Bechdel test, no. Race Bechdel, less so. Significantly less so. Cultural relevance, did Simpsons do it? Maybe, but also they did have a white guy play an Indian, so maybe they did. Does that count?
Pops not.
Give myself a toasty for that one.
we love you, Frank. Hank.
Yeah.
Frank.
I mean, Hank.
Frank Scorpio.
Porn parody. I did not look that one up.
No.
Recasties. Well, I kind of had one earlier when I said if it was made today, it would be a stoner film and Seth Rogen would be the voice. And then I guess if it was a few years earlier, maybe James Franco would be a scientist or something.
Yeah, nice.
Oh, what's his name? Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers
could be in it. Yeah, it's could like the bad guy or
could
whatever.
Could be the robot?
Nah, I think he'd be a military guy.
Oh, I'd like him to be the robot.
That'd be good, just in his normal voice.
Just a crass robot.
That would be great. I was thinking this is an easy one to do edits for because anything with a mouth that doesn't move, I can make into a fun video. So shoot me your short circuit edit ideas and I'll make some maybe when I find some extra hours in the day.
Yeah. I feel like it is a sitcom, like all that stuff in the house, you know, when, you know, it could have been like it was Alf. You could have a short circuit version of Alf, basically.
Yeah. Like it should have been a TV show, you mean? Like it should have just been.
Yeah. And then at the end of the movie, it's got a montage that's very sitcom-y. The song, it's all.
Oh, yeah. It kind of just looks like. Yeah. That's very astute on your part, Craig. I'm into that.
It's very astute on your part.
Oh, thanks.
But man. Overall, I'm going to say I think this one's best left in the past, Craig.
I'm with you.
How about you? Yeah. And, you know, Short Circuit 2 is still up for debate. And maybe we'll get to that one day in another 4 years or so.
Yeah.
I mean, it still has that same issue, I guess. But maybe it's funnier. maybe he eats a hot dog.
He's a very endearing character, though. I remember loving that guy when I was a kid.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, he agree. I think.
More charming than Steve Guttenberg, which is nigh impossible.
Yeah. Like, he's compelling.
A lot more than his current characters, the little weasel-faced ass on Succession. Or is he an ass-faced weasel?
That's a good one because is he Stephen Fisher or Fisher Stevens? Jeremy Zion. All right, what are we doing next week? Oh, yeah, we're doing Aliens
next week. With Raiders of the Last Pod.
Of the last pod.
I don't know.
Hopefully not.
I've got to listen to one of their shows. They're like proper movie men.
Yeah.
They've interviewed they've interviewed like Robert Rodriguez, etc.
Yeah, and I believe they're LA based and they get invited to cool shit. We don't invited to nothing.
Like the Viper Room?
If you want to invite. Oh, no, we got invited to a wedding once and I respect that.
100%. Top that.
Raiders. We love our friends of the show. We don't need anything else. We love you guys. So, yeah, we'll see you next week for Aliens.
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. That's what they
the noises. Yeah. Bye. Nice software.
Why didn't they, if they were looking for that, didn't they get that in the beginning?
Good
huh?
question. What happened was I was originally hired. The original character in Short Circuit's name was Ben Trigger, and he was supposed to be a UCLA robotics genius. And the problem with him in the script was he was very similar to Newton Crosby, or Steve Guttenberg's character. So John Badham, the director, decided to make my character of some kind of ethnic background, and they'd already hired me. So he asked me if I would mind trying like Chinese or something, some kind of ethnicity who can't speak the language, who's a genius, but who's new to the English language. So I said, wow, what a great challenge. So we tried Indian because Chinese, my eyes and everything, you know, I would have to have makeup every day. And we tried Indian and I had a good time with the accent, easier time with it. And they dyed my beard and my hair and put in brown lenses and a lot of makeup, and I learned about Hinduism, and they hired a guy, Robert Easton, to teach me the accent. And for Short Circuit 2, I really wanted to get really into it. I went to India for a month, and I lived in a village, and I I started learning Hinduism, Hindu and Gujarat, which is there's a lot of different, there's like 40 or 50 languages in India, and I chose Gujarat, could be Gujarati accent. So I really wanted to get specific and not stereotype and represent Indian people well, because they're wonderful. And
you think they'll buy this, that they'll like it?
I don't know. Here's what I did. In shooting Short Circuit 2, I found a guy named Kamlesh, who was Gujarati, and I had him by my side 24 hours a day, and we hung out, and he was always counseling me, and I said, what do you think? And he goes, very good, very nice, very soft-spoken man. And, oh, no, no, Indian, we wouldn't do that, no, no. Or, and he'd teach me, you know, Marigayo, and he'd teach me, I know, I can swear, I can tell you every swear word in Hindi, in Gujarati, I know a lot of swear words. So, actually, there's a couple in the movie that nobody knows but me and Gujaratis.
And Indians.
Yeah. So I hope that they will, you know, completely buy it.